Okay, now in this second lecture, let's take up some of the techniques that you would use to remedy a situation where somebody was using a flock of beams and was having trouble exteriorizing and so forth. It's about time we got this thing solved. Now, as I just showed you, which was just a demonstration, the kind of demonstration you would use, really, to research, not the kind you would use to process somebody, show somebody, hey, look, there's something sitting here, see? Give him some reality on it, or you'd find it yourself. And you would discover that a third dynamic determinism was what got in the road of an individual's reliability on postulates. You could call any case trouble, trouble on the third dynamic. This would liable to give people the idea that, of course, the total thing wrong with people is the third dynamic, therefore they should become utterly antisocial. The trouble actually is that people are antisocial and should become social. Now, those are hard words, but an individual who has a basic distrust of the activities, motivations, or actually the action of somebody else is going to go on having trouble with beams because he's going to say something and then he's going to insist that it happen. And when we say insist that it happen, we mean push, shove, pull, haul. And after a while, he won't push, shove, pull, haul with any good effective energy, like good live effort. He won't push and haul with his arms and hit with his fists and so forth. He'll stand back and again go into a straight of mocking it up in energy. And he'll push beams at people without recognizing he's pushing beams at people. And he'll chew up his face and he'll chew up his head and he'll lay energy ridges around, which are fascinating things. Now, is it really people? Well, no, really. You get a distraction on the part of people from the meshed universe. Now, here you are, very happily sawing a board. Let's get an example of this. You're very happily sawing a board, and it's giving you a little bit of trouble, but you're making all right out of it. Of course, it's rather silly what you're doing, sawing a board. That's kind of silly, because actually all you ought to have to do is just say, be sawed, and it's sawed. But that's a little bit above our level of acceptance in operation, so therefore let's just say, well, you're just sawing this board. Well, a board will give you a certain amount of trouble. It is a problem, and you are the solver of the problem. Well, it gives you this little bit of trouble, and you start exerting energy against it. And if you become really anxious about sawing boards, you will saw boards with great rapidity. Instead of relaxedly sawing the board off, you've seen some old carpenter who had no anxiety about the whole field of carpentering, or about effort either. You've seen him saw a board, and he just saws away, and the saw takes about a 2-inch bite every time he throws it through the board, or an inch bite, and it just goes through, and he just saw in there, and he finishes up the day. He's perfectly relaxed about his carpentering, and he's got something built and so forth, and he's cheerful about it. Now, let's take somebody who has an anxiety about his command over the situation, and we'll find out the first thing he does is he starts to saw this board, and he'll saw a few saws, and then all of a sudden, one of the teeth, you see, because he was bending it or something, bending the saw, one of the teeth will catch slightly, and it'll trigger, you know, trip. And it didn't go smoothly, and so he'd yank it back. And now his next thrust through, you see, that tooth will trip harder because he's pushing harder. And he's not really letting the saw saw the board at all. What he's doing, he is sawing a board now with full energy, and you'll see that he saws faster and faster and faster and faster and faster. And finally, he just goes, and he gets almost through the board, and he's worn out, and alas, he gets the thing off, it splinters at the end, and I got that board sawed. Well, that's fine. Now let's get the next one. I'm pretty tired. And he'll go saw, saw, trip again, you know, and then saw, and then zzz, and then, ooh, I've got to get that board sawed. I've got to get a saw. And what happens in a relatively short space of time, let's say weeks or something on the subject of carpentry, the boards lie there. They don't get sawed anymore. See, he just leaves alone now. He skips it. Boards won't obey orders. Well, it's a problem, and he tries to throw more havingness into the problem. He tries to rush the time, and you'll get opening procedure by duplication. You'll find people rushing the time. What they're trying to do is saw the board in an awful hurry. You get them oversawing those boards in an awful hurry, and they feel pretty good. All right. If we have an anxiety like that about a board, and if we were to go on with that, how could it be complicated? That actually will not entirely spin a guy. I mean, just operation of problems in the physical universe. People will go on that way for a long time and handle the physical universe and do all right until somebody comes along and distracts their attention. Now let's get the actual modus operandi behind sawing this board. How did this fellow get into this frame of mind whereby he had to tackle a board like this? He sometime or other in his life, maybe when he was young, he probably had a father or an old carpenter or somebody around who heckled him, who kept distracting his attention from the work. You shouldn't do that. You should do it this way. You should do it some other way. You should pull it this way. You should do it more leisurely. You should saw it this way. You should saw it that way. You should do this. You should do that. And so on. And finally, he was already completely disgusted with the idea of being able to apply himself to a messed universe problem. In other words, he got distracted. Here, this mechanism of distraction, people who are distracting people from the messed universe and distracting their attention and so forth, are themselves simply making fairly sure that nobody else gets any work or effort but themselves. There is so little physical universe, so very little physical universe, you see, that they have to have an enormous quantity of it. And they're making sure they do by getting everybody's attention off of it. That's a fact. They get everybody's attention off of it and elsewhere, and off the problems of the physical universe. All right, if they do this, you can count then upon an individual sooner or later becoming very anxious every time he addresses the physical universe. Now, I'll give you a problem here, in an actual problem that I processed out of a pre-clear. A girl had been running a big billing machine in a bank. Now, these things are dogs, these big machines, anyhow. I mean, they're big pieces of sheets of paper. They go in, they hit the keys, and they pull a piece of paper out and put it in a basket and so forth. But this machine is running up all kinds of cross tallies and doing all sorts of interesting things. And they get out of whack rather easily, but not too badly. Well, she was doing all right with this machine, and actually had worked with this machine for years. And then one fine day had a nervous breakdown. Well, if you wanted to take a very careless look at it, you would say, well, she worked on that machine so long and concentrated her attention so long without getting a cross communication and so forth that this finally upset her. No. No, life is totally capable of taking care of that sort of a situation until something of equal magnitude, thought, comes along and gives them a true distraction. And we traced this girl's immediate case breakdown to a change of boss. They had put a woman in charge. There'd been a man in charge who was a rather easygoing fellow in charge of the billing section. You know, and he was all right, and he come through, and he kept everybody working at a pretty high rate of speed, but he was perfectly calm, and he didn't take anybody's attention off their work. See, he didn't disturb anybody or upset them. And all of a sudden, we got a change of boss. We got a woman on the job, and this girl happened to be pretty. And this woman took a peculiar delight in yanking this girl's attention off her machine. And she started making mistakes on this machine. And her ability in handling the machine, as far as she was concerned, started to deteriorate. And it got to a point, finally, of her attention being distracted so often that she was called into the front office and was warned that if she didn't pick up in the quality of her work, she had been reported by her supervisor, she didn't pick up in the quality of her work, why, that she was going to be dismissed. And so then what happened was her supervisor immediately picked up the tempo of yanking her attention off the machine. And all of a sudden, the girl had a nervous breakdown. Well, there must have been a scarcity of attention here someplace. She must have been paying an awful lot of attention to some other human being, or must have had a lot of background already that deteriorated her ability to put attention out. But in essence, this was just as much of a problem as there was there. Attention had been distracted off a machine to a point where she no longer could have the machine. And we've got it into a problem of having this right now. It's right there. She no longer could have the machine. Her case was remedied by mocking up enough of these big billing machines and so forth and stuffing them in to reacquaint her with the idea that she could own a billing machine. then she could have a billing machine, and so forth. And we went right on up the line, and she got into a higher ability bracket, where she was no longer simply monitoring a billing machine. She could handle other types of equipment with great ease and accuracy. Well, how did we do this? We just ignored the human problem. And we blew it by rehabilitating the individual's ownership of the machine. So what is this distraction? Mechanically, we could describe it, and I will in a moment, just in terms of attention alone. But what is the actual mechanics of this distraction? I said individuals who come around and do this know there isn't enough messed universe to go around, you see, so they've got to have a lot more messed universe, but they really can't have it either because everybody else has got it. This individual's already in bad shape who's doing this. They know everybody else has the messed universe and there isn't any of it to amount to anything. Not enough of it, certainly. So they find anybody holding down any piece of the messed universe, they try to distract their attention off of it. And this gives the other person an anxiety about having a piece of the messed universe. And so they own less, and owning less, of course, control less. It isn't theirs anymore, in other words. Disenfranchisement. You could call this whole thing, we could get very technical and set up a whole subject here just called disenfranchisement. It's distraction of attention. Now, after this has happened to an individual an awful lot, he gets two things that happen to him. One, he believes he can't own or have the physical universe. And the other problem he gets into two other problems, but this one subdivided, is attention. He believes he has a scarcity of attention. He can only put attention on something, one thing at a time, something on this order. Well, actually, he has used this as a protest. This is a consideration which he has offered other people, saying, now look, I've only got so much attention to put on this, and if you keep distracting my attention, I will make a mistake or have an accident. This is a mechanism which he means to use so that they will go away. His intention in saying this and considering this is so they'll go away, and then it doesn't stick with them, so he proves it. And he becomes a problem at that moment. He proves it to them that if they don't stop distracting his attention, he proves it to them his attention is so scarce that if they don't stop distracting his attention, he's going to make mistakes or have an accident. And then he proves it by having an accident or making a mistake. And this is merely a setting up a problem for somebody else. Well, he sets it up. His basic consideration on attention is there isn't enough of it. He doesn't have enough attention, and he limits his own attention, and by limiting it, thereby seeks to make people leave him in possession of any part of the physical universe which he happens to have nailed down. Now, there's your mechanism behind it. The second part of this is that an individual's ownership is dependent to a large degree upon the amount of attention he can devote. If he can't give attention to something, he can't own it. If you've noticed something you have not used for a long time, you are liable to have a strange feeling about. In other words, you haven't given it much attention, so therefore it isn't yours anymore. If you think for a moment of a tie or a dress or something like that that you haven't worn for a long time, you think of such an article that is kicking around your house and so forth. Well, how is your concept on that? Do you own it or don't you? You kind of do, but you see, by not devoting attention to something, then you go out of ownership of it. Well, the mechanisms then are basically the mechanisms of attention and of ownership. Attention runs rather rapidly into, as a process, would run rather rapidly into just getting the individual to put his attention on several things. There is a process which is basic in the factors themselves of simply getting an individual to put his attention on a lot of things. You have him put his attention on item A, then on item B, while he's still got it on item A, and then put it on item C, while he's still got his attention on item A and B. Now, when he's got his attention fixed on three things at the same time, and he is certain he can keep his attention fixed on first two, well, the first really one, and then two, and then three things, then you can build it up and have him put his attention on four things, and on five things, and six things, and seven things, and eight things. It's a process, which is in itself a rather shortcut process. It's a rather fast process if you remember to do it with certainty. Now, you can see then that an individual's running on contact. Here's an individual who runs on contact, is getting his attention, getting him able to put his attention on one thing. That's opening procedure 8C. Let's at least get him to put his attention on one thing at a time. All right, now where would the case hang up? Would the case hang up just because you merely educated him to one thing at a time? That you got him up to a point where he put one attention on one thing at a time? Yeah. Yeah, to some degree. So you'd have to increase the workability of any technique which simply rehabilitated his ability to put his attention on one thing at a time. You'd have to put his attention on two things at a time with certainty. First, he's certain he can put them on one thing at a time, you see. Now, he's certain he can put them on two things at a time, and now three things at a time, and now four things at a time, and five things at a time, and all of a sudden, as he goes, he will blow this basic consideration that there is a scarcity of attention. See, that's his own consideration. So here's an entire process all by itself. Right straight out of the factors. Get somebody to put his attention on one thing. Okay, you do that with opening procedure. Now you can put his attention on two things. Usually an individual kind of have a tendency to hang up there for a little while because he's only got two hands. Then you discover that he's got 2 feet. So having put his attention on two things with his hands and two things with his feet, now you've got him up to 4 things. Now having put some attention on something with the back of his head with pressure. If you can get him up to 5, you'll have blown it. See, he'll just reconsider now. He'll reconsider. I don't have to put my attention on just one thing at a time. Attention is not scarce, in other words. Put your attention on the 2 back anchor points of the room, now the 4 back anchor points of the room, now the 4 back anchor points and the 2 front anchor points of the room, now the 4 front anchor points of the room, at the same time the 4 back anchor points of the room. This would be that kind of a process, which would make a spaciation, which is still limited to 8. He's only putting his attention on 8 things at a time. Now, the real ball up behind the case in terms of energy is the individual has rigged up things to put his attention on. You know, he's rigged up a machine to keep his attention on something. And then he puts his attention on one thing, and he has several machines reactivated because he's put his attention on just one thing. Now he's got several machines putting their attention on several things. See this? So he's working on an economy of attention. He's built 5 machines to put their attention on 5 different things. Now he's rigged them in such a way that by putting his attention on any one thing, all 5 machines devote attention. And after a while, this guy's confused. He's, what the devil is putting attention on anything around here? Every time I put my attention on something, something else happens. Well, he's had to forget about these other machines because he knows he hasn't got that much attention. Now, let's take somebody who's exteriorized. We did get them out. They were running around and having a good time and so forth. But they really haven't any ownership, no effort. They can't put out effort. They can't own things, so forth. You've hung up on the attention factor. And that's all. And the test of that would simply be this. You have an individual make a machine that will make anchor points. Just have him make a machine that makes anchor points. And tell him to walk off and leave it running. And now he, of course, trying to take his attention off it, it stops running. You just get him to a point where he can keep his attention on the machine and go off someplace else. And put his attention on something else. 2. See, he doesn't need to economize his attention. He could probably put his attention with full sentience and full experience and full differentiation on 100,000 objects simultaneously. He could probably run completely several bodies simultaneously. I had this interesting experience on this line. I found an old doll I dropped. Just on the supposition I didn't have enough attention to run the doll anymore. I got angry about life in general and so forth and got kind of sore at somebody else and so on. And I proved it all right. I stopped running the doll, too. Yet the doll had been running for many, many years. It had been running across several Earth lifespans. But attention on the doll with full awareness. But when this thing first closed in, that there was still some kind of a hookup with this doll, I was about the most confused boy you ever ran into in your life. I was a real confused Satan, believe me. I had my attention on my body right here, and attention on something else, which I won't mention, which was rather consistent attention. And then all of a sudden discovered that there was a backtrack and a beam system, which yet was too collapsed and was not powerful enough to keep running this doll. And so I simply picked up this doll and started running this doll. Entirely different sphere of activity. And suddenly realized that I didn't know whether I was here or in Christmas. When the doll ate and slept, and when this mock-up ate and slept, and when other things did this and did that, and when you recharge the doll's batteries and so on, I was all set to shove a couple of dry cells into the back of this one. I was the most beautifully confused fellow. Simply why? Just on this single basis of I had considered you put your attention on one body at a time for quite a little while, you see, and just run one body at a time. Had changed my consideration on the thing utterly to get this doll back into gear again, and then found out it could run two bodies simultaneously. I said, this is a lot of fun. How many kinds of bodies can I run simultaneously, one right after the other, or all together? And I went out on quite a spree. I worked on ants for an hour or so, and trying to find out how many ants I could totally coordinate simultaneously. And I was doing real well. I got up to 3 ants that I could totally monitor simultaneously and still keep a couple of bodies running. And every time I would have a little difficulty, I would find this consideration, attention is scarce, scattered around in a machine somewhere. And it would blow again. I'd blow another one. And then I'd try to do one more span of attention, and another one of these considerations would turn up, and boom. See? In other words, here was a whole pattern of activity, each part of which was impeded by this sole consideration. Attention is scarce. Now, so we get into our rough cases, we get into exteriorization, we get out of control, we get out of the use of beams by giving an individual back his ability to monitor, or at least keep his attention on at first, you see, one thing. You know, he's gone on that one. Most people can't keep their attention on one thing. Well, you get that, so he's really got his attention very well on one thing. Opening perceived by duplication is one of the things that will do this. Then we get into two things, and get him so he can keep his attention very easily on two things. These things are not moving, you understand. I mean, just a couple of objects. And then on 3 things, and then on 4 things, and then on 5 things, and then on 6 things, and then on 7 things, and then on 8 things, and then on 9 things, and then on 10 things. And maybe about this time, he's gotten up to a level where he can tolerate one thing moving. So we get his attention on one moving object. We've knocked out all the other attentions now. We get his attention on one moving object. 2 moving objects. Just attention on the moving object, not controlling the object. Attention on 3 moving objects, each one individually and completely perceiving. 4 moving objects, 5 moving objects, 6 moving objects, 7 moving objects, 8 moving objects, 9 moving objects, 10 moving objects. Okay, now let's get him down to a point where he's going to control by postulate one object, such as an ant. He's going to control one object. He's going to control one moving object. All right, we get him so he can run an ant's body. And we can get him so he can run 2 ants' bodies, and 3 ants' bodies, and 4 ants' bodies, and 5 ants' bodies, and 6 ants' bodies, and 7 ants' bodies, and 8 ants' bodies, and 9 ants' bodies, and 10 ants' bodies. About that time, your boy, by the way, will not only just be exteriorized, he'll be flying. We have remedied the most basic thing we could remedy. It's right there in the second paragraph, the factors. Third paragraph. This is a total process. It doesn't necessarily join up with any other process. You could just go on with this process and, as a drill, heave your pre-clear out and so forth. But you'd have to do it very carefully with this consideration yourself. We've got to get this boy absolutely certain that he can put his attention on this, and he does have his attention on it, and he is looking at this. And when we get his attention on two objects, we must be absolutely certain that he is looking at two objects at the same time, seeing two objects at the same time. He'll run this kind of a gag on you. We look at one for a split second, the other one for a split second, the first one for a split second, the second one for a split second, and the first one for a split second, you know? Bing, 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 bing. Yes, he'll say, I'll have my attention on two objects. Oh, no, he doesn't. You want his attention solidly on one object and solidly on the other object simultaneously so that he's looking at them both and registering them entirely. Scarcity of attention is then a higher level than beams. But where an individual has had difficulty in getting objects to pay attention to him, has had difficulty in getting things to obey him, to be controlled by him, and so forth, he is having, one, trouble with attention, and two, trouble with control. So he starts to control that object. And he starts using beams on that object. If you were to be around somebody who is a rather high-pressure individual, you know, a promoter or something of the sort, if you were around this individual any length of time, do you know how you could get yourself controlled by him faster than any other thing you could possibly do? It just refused to pay any attention to him. Brother, you get yourself controlled. Now, women, for some reason or other, are more liable to dropping into this trap than men are. Because in marital relationships, they quite commonly begin to use this as a mechanism on the man. They stop paying attention. You know, as far as control is concerned, they'll drop doing this and drop doing that, and they'll omit this and they'll omit that, you see. And the next thing you know, the guy gets frantic about this thing, and he turns around and starts to impose, actually, more or less physical controls on them. He doesn't want them to go out and run around the countryside. He doesn't want to do this. He's insisting on his breakfast being cooked, and he's insisting on this happening and that happening. Not for any reason at all, except that he found attention from the woman scarce. And so he started to control. Where you get attention made scarce, you get control as an almost inevitable secondary effect. You get beams being used, barriers, so on. Now, men do this even more covertly. Because a man, having a great many concerns in existence, may very well avoid giving a woman a lot of attention. He may avoid it, you see. I mean, he may just accidentally overlook this and overlook that, overlook an anniversary, overlook getting home early to dinner, overlook the party date that he was supposed to have, you know, and forget this and forget that. Actually, his attention scattered all over the environment. And the next thing you know, the girl will start in trying to control him like mad. She will get suspicious of him. She'll get various reasons why she has to control him. She'll get all sorts of rationale backing this up. And she gets into a frantic state because, between the construction of men and women, women are less physically strong. And we get a bad marital situation there. Each one, you see, denying the other some kind of attention, and this leading immediately into an effort to control. Now, if you've seen anybody work on a car, you understand what I'm talking about. The individual presses the starter button. Now, an electrical contact is just an electrical contact. The more physical force you put into electrical contact has no bearing, the amount of physical force. If the electrical contact is there, it's there. That's all there is to it. So we get this individual starting this car, and the car doesn't immediately respond and start. In other words, it fails to give him attention. It doesn't alert and say, here I am, sir, pocket a pocket a pocket, see? It just doesn't start. So we'll see somebody actually bear down with his thumb on that pin there on the panel, you know, and squeeze the wheel. See, there is your reaction to impose control because attention has not been granted. Now you see what's wrong with people who won't exteriorize, or people who use beams, or people who very foolishly go around and run into booby traps. Okay.